this is what I'm going to tell you about today. Okay? I call this the new unreasonable. Unreasonable 3.0. So if I can have the slides. This is what the unreasonable effectiveness of acid is all about. The combination, the unique combination of algorithms, cloud, IoT, and data coming together in profound ways to change how applications are built and managed. So why do I call it unreasonable 3.0? Now, in 1960, a famous physicist called Eugene Wigner wrote a paper called The Unreasonable Effectiveness of Mathematics in the Natural Sciences. He was talking about how mathematics is incredibly effective in physics, and concepts like Riemannian geometry invented in the 1800s were so effective in Einstein's theory of general relativity. And who knew? He said, we don't deserve this power of mathematics in explaining our natural world. That was unreasonable 1.0. Now, in 2009, a famous scientist called Peter Norvig, Alan Halvey, and Fernando Pereira wrote an article called The Unreasonable Effectiveness of Data. Now, they said this. They said, well, mathematics is very, very effective in physics, but when it comes to economics or language or things that describe people's behavior, mathematics isn't as effective. But in those cases, sometimes when you have enormous amount of historical data, data is incredibly effective. And even tasks like translating between, say, English and Chinese or vice versa become amenable to statistical language translation when you have tremendous amount of data, a tremendous amount of parallel translations between English and Chinese, then you can learn to translate. They call that the unreasonable effectiveness of data. That's unreasonable 2.0. Now, today we live in a world where it's not just about mathematics alone or just about data alone. It is the combination of powerful predictive algorithms and statistics, the incredible power of cloud computing, the incredible ability to instrument every type of behavior on the planet with sensors that comes from the Internet of Things, and all of that massive data being brought together and integrated together to create new software applications. That's unreasonable effectiveness of acid. The best way for me to start telling you the story is with an example. Think about the future of the intensive care. Now, Cleveland Clinic has been a leading innovator here, and they're bringing all of this power, the ability to collect data from sensors, the ability to use the cloud, the ability to predict with algorithms, and use all of that data to optimize the management of intensive care units so you can not only deliver high quality of service, but do so in an extremely timely way with great efficiency. And to tell you the story in person, I have Kirian Willis of Cleveland Clinic, one of the key directors of this effort. Kirian?
Thank you.
Welcome.
Hi. So today there's a national shortage of ICU physicians. And to help with that problem, the Cleveland Clinic developed an application called eHospital. eHospital is a population health management platform that's in use today. It operates 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., giving overnight coverage to over 150 patients at 7 different hospitals. By the end of the year, it'll be 200 patients at 9 different hospitals. And the way in which we're managing all this data for these patients is by using a series of risk algorithms to direct the patient, direct the attention of our doctors and nurses to the patients who need it the most. This is a photo from our operations center in Cleveland. There's a user here at one of our workstations. And on the far left-hand side, you can see we've got a giant monitor where there's one tile per patient. And we're color-coding the tile on how sick we think the patient is. Then when the user wants to see more information about that patient, they click on the tile, and we coordinate the other four screens to information just about that patient. The bottom middle is the EMR, electronic medical record, with the patient information, patient history. The bottom right is a waveform monitor from the bedside. The top right is images for the patient, CAT scans, MRIs, x-rays. And the top middle is a camera view into the patient's room. Each room is outfitted with a ceiling-mounted camera that provides pan, tilt, zoom capabilities to see the patients. Here we have a sample of a patient tile, and this is a snapshot of all the information we have about the patient that's relevant at that moment in time. Information like what drugs are they on, how much oxygen are they getting, recent vitals, and different alerts were highlighted to the users. And this is very good at telling us how sick the patient is right now, but where it falls short for us is predicting the trajectory of that patient. Where are they going to be in the near future? And for us, that's our next big step, is using predictive modeling to tell us about the patient's immediate future. We want to give our physicians the ability to see over the horizon about the events that are coming up they can't see today. And the first model we're working on with Microsoft is for cardiovascular failure. And we run this model for our patients and then give that information to the physician to show them that there may be a 10%, 30%, or 50% chance of cardiac failure for a patient in the next 12 hours. And based on that information, they can make better decisions for our patients. That's just one of the many models we want to be able to run for the patients. Risk of readmission, is it time for this patient to be discharged from the ICU? What's the likelihood of an infection? How long will they be in the hospital? Or even if they leave the hospital, how likely is it they may not come back for their checkup appointment? And the way we make this work is we take data from our EMR, which is our source of truth, we push it up to the cloud. There we create and train the models. And when they're ready, we publish them via a web service API. And then for each individual patient, we're able to take that data from our EMR, run it against the model, and inject it back into the EMR. Once it's in the EMR for us, we're able to expose that to other applications such as eHospital. We have a number of other applications that are data-driven from that EMR. And for us, we think that working with the Azure cloud, partnering with Microsoft, it's a huge opportunity for us. We can build new creative models, and I think really have a huge impact on the way we care for our patients. Thank you very much.
Amazing. So the power of health data with machine learning is going to revolutionize the future of healthcare. For the first time now, we are seeing enormous efforts across hospital chains, hospital systems, not just in US, but across the world, collecting this very, very rich data on populations and their health, and then applying intelligence, statistics, and machine learning to predict outcomes and maybe heart failure rates or what is happening in ICU, whether somebody needs blood pressure medication, every one of those things. So you are foreseeing what the future is going to be for a patient, as opposed to, you know, an event happening for a patient and then you treat that later. So predictive healthcare is becoming possible. That is going to lead to unreasonably effective healthcare outcomes, and it's very powerful. So let me talk a little bit about the unreasonable effectiveness of algorithms, and then I'll talk about unreasonable effectiveness of cloud, IoT, and data. You know, today, every business is an algorithmic business, even the ones you least expect. Now, all of you know about financial trading. That's now 80% algorithmic. 80% of all trades in the markets are driven by algorithms. But there are even dairy farms using advanced analytics and statistics to manage cow production and milk production and optimizing the whole thing. Who knew even the oldest industries in the world would be leveraging this type of technology? And so enabling that transformation in many ways is the connectivity that we have and the power of the cloud behind all of this. And then when you take all of this, you take the power of the cloud to host enormous amounts of data and analyze it and deliver it in applications, you can take it to a new level. Algorithms then are also now getting embedded close to the data. When you embed powerful machine learning and statistical models into databases and run them right next to it, you can run them at incredible speeds. For example, let's think about an application like loan scoring in a financial services environment, like credit unions. When you actually take the loan scoring applications that are more traditional statistical applications, and today now being reinvented with machine learning and so on, when you run it with enormous data right next to the data in the database, you can get incredible speed ups. And the best way for me to show that is with a story. Jack Henry & Associates is a very leading independent software vendor that are building applications for credit unions all over the world. And to tell you the story, I have Kirk and Tommy from Symitar subsidiary of Jack Henry & Associates. Tommy, Kirk, welcome.
Thank you,
Tommy. So,
good morning, everybody. I understand there was a little bit of a challenge getting over here, but I'm glad you're here, and I thank you for your time. I'm going to talk a little bit about Jack Henry & Associates and just to give you a background of who we are, and then we're going to jump right into the demo. So Jack Henry is a large ISV that's been serving the financial services industry for over 40 years. We just celebrated our 40th anniversary this year. And the best way I describe it to people is if you were to open up a bank or a credit union, you could use our software to run it completely. So all of our solutions do that. We have a division that focuses primarily on the credit union space, which is Symitar. And we've done a lot of good work with Microsoft that was really cool. Is one of the things I love about my job is I get to facilitate discussions with Microsoft architects and our architects. And what we're going to show you today is a result of that. We did some work with the SQL Server team and then our ARCU team. So I'm going to let Kirk go on with the demo.
All right. Thank you, Tommy. Just a little bit of background. Advanced Reporting for Credit Unions is an enterprise data warehouse. It's built on the Microsoft stack. Previous slide, please. It's built on the Microsoft stack. It has a .NET UI. It has a SQL Server backend. We use SSIS for the ETL, and we leave that open so that clients can extend it how they want to. We use analytics services, and we also use SSRS. SSRS provides the context, brings that data together into reports so that you can see year over year, month over month, day over day. You can see your progress against your goal. You can have peer data, and you can do, you can have peer data and you can see your performance against goal. But our client said, that's nice, but that's not enough. So we came up with the concept of an intelligent data warehouse. So if you see the previous slide, we used an R model, and we looked at loan charge-offs. That's the model we'll be looking at today. The loan charge-offs, there we go. We ran R against the data, we found the correlation, and then we presented that out to the users in Power BI. So if we can go over here.
So Kurt, real quick, so the data we had, and then we ran it against analytics, but we actually already knew the answers before.
We thought we knew, and that's one of the things that changes the scientific method a little bit. You have ideas, and then you have big solutions that encompass the entire organization. So we used R to find additional insights into the data, and that brought to light some interesting things. So if I go over here to Power BI, and I look at the current state of things, I can see all of these additional insights brought to light. I can see the possibility of charge-offs by credit score. I can look at those by loan status, by city, by branch, by geographic location. And all of those were minor correlation points that brought together in our model. Now, if we go over to the predictions tab, what we did is we have a 3-year archive on the data. That can be longer for some clients, but we looked at years 3 and 2 to do our research on the model, and then we projected that against the current year. And what we found is the algorithm was 97% accurate in predicting a loan that was going to charge off. So here we see it all scored.
Now, about how many loans are this that we're running up against?
We're looking at 20 million loans.
Okay.
And we're looking at across all of our branches and distributed across 7 states in the country. And so we can look at this and we can get a simple score about what loans are going to charge off, what their probability is, and how that's going to work. And that was great, but let's take the next step. Let's make that pinpoint solution. Let's not just come up with global credit union processes or procedures that are going to affect this. So we go into the what if. And what you see right now is this is a blank slate. And what we're going to do is we're going to use PowerShell. And we're going to work with this data in memory. And what we're going to do here is we're going to see what result changing the interest rate would have on the entire loan portfolio and the risk associated. So I'm going to type in 4.5 here, hit enter. And what we see is PowerShell's working and changing this variable in memory. So we don't have to change this across our entire database. We're just changing this in memory.
And again, this is 20 million loans?
We're looking at scoring, using SQL Server to score 20 million loans in our what-if analysis. And there we go. We can see that we did 20 million loans in approximately 7 seconds. Now I'm going to go back to the what-if. I'm going to go up to the top here and move home, hit refresh. Give this just a second to go through. So it's going through 20 million loans just that quickly, changing the score, using SQL Server as a scoring engine, and we can see that we went from approximately 2.2 million loans in our portfolio that we needed to look at that were in danger of charging off to 3.8. And this is a theoretical. This is what we're walking through. But this gives us an idea. Now what this does is this gives us the ability to remove research bias.
Okay, now you're talking dirty. Research bias.
Okay, so when you set up a research project, and to our world that's mostly business and system analysts, you can set up a process that proves you're right. Or you can set up a scale where you're really only looking at one thing at a time and drilling down, and that's a long and lengthy process that can just have mistakes in it. So it gives us the ability to get rid of that type of mistake. Also gives us additional insight. So we can see here, if you look at the bottom of this graphic, I've got branch 5 out there that is in no greater danger of charge-offs than they were before. So they obviously have different conditions that they're working with. I can be proactive. I don't have to wait for these to charge off. I can come up with policies and procedures. I can come up with calling programs that keep these loans from charging off. And as we also talked about with the additional insight, I can make a much more precise solution. I don't have to come up with global things of lowering my risk rating or doing this or that. I can talk to a branch manager who can do a calling program and save those loans.
So 2 weeks ago at our Symitar conference, we showed this to our customer base. What was the response?
They were ecstatic. This type of power, this currently, when they do it a couple times a year. It requires the finance department to basically shut down and focus on this for weeks at a time. And this is all at their fingertips. They can run it as many times as they want to. They can run this daily if they choose to.
That's awesome.
And what it's going to do is it's going to give our credit unions the ability to be more flexible, be more focused in their solutions, and ultimately more profitable.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's amazing. It's an amazing demo. So, I don't know if you caught all of that, but there were three amazing things in that demo. The first one is that the power of the algorithm to predict loan charge-offs, okay? And it's actually very good. Second thing is that they just showed a demo of 1.1 million loans per second being predicted, and going through 20 million loans and predicting their default rates took 17 seconds. By the way, that is not possible today in any other software system. The only database that can keep up that speed of running extremely sophisticated analytical models inside the database, making that possible, that is SQL Server. And that's because unique innovations we have built by bringing analytics inside the SQL Server system. And third, you saw the intelligent data warehouse being born. Traditionally, data warehouses are historical analytical systems that look at the past and give you lots of query capability and aggregation and analytics and reporting capability. Today you saw the what if analysis on that. They put a new interest rate into the system and chunked through 20 million loans, got the predictions, understood all the statistics in that new scenario so they can foresee the future, and then the enterprise itself can be intelligent and can model their business for the maximum profitability and the minimum risk. And that scenario is applicable everywhere. And that truly is the power that we are bringing together with algorithms embedded in databases. So let me talk a little bit more about it. Pushing intelligence to where the data lives is a new pattern that is very, very powerful for application building. Now, think about the time when applications were built before databases. Before databases came into being, data-driven applications required that the application manage all of the data. It had to do the indexing, it had the storage, the query planning, the security, all of that. It was very hard to build data-driven applications in that time. When databases were invented, we created this nice separation of concerns. The database management system took care of all of the indexing, the storage, the querying, the query optimization, the access control, the parallelism, all of those things was in the DBMS. And the application tier became very simple, interacted with the database tier through a query mechanism. Now, the way analytical applications are being built today, machine learning and so on, is like the time before databases. The application itself manages all of this complexity of pulling the data, computing variables and aggregates, pushing the, keeping the model. All of that thing is in the application. No wonder you see very few intelligent software. And this is why when you move that sophistication of the algorithmic computations and the modeling away from the application tier, embed that as stored procedures in a database, suddenly then you can manage those stored procedures like databases do manage data. It becomes data. And so now what happens? You do all of your analytics inside the database. The models are in stored procedures. They run next to the data, so they run incredibly fast. You just saw that with Jack Henry's demo. You then make that version controlled. You can report on it, so it's all managed entirely inside the database with security control and so on. So all of the benefits of the database management systems is available for machine learning. And that analytical model then is also shareable across multiple applications. So you get the applications to leverage the same predictive model. Very, very good. And so SQL Server now makes all of that possible. It runs, by the way, on premises and in the cloud. It runs on Linux and Windows. It can use any data. And the most exciting thing being, R runs inside of SQL Server. So the transactional applications of the future can now leverage deep intelligence embedded inside the database as stored procedures. And any application, whether it be a Java, Ruby, C++, Python application, can now go access that by issuing queries to a database. And that is what makes now SQL Server the platform for data-driven intelligence. That is very, very powerful. Now, in the cloud, when you come to it, we have another suite of services. Now, we've got what's called a Cortana Intelligence Suite. Think about this like Office 365 for enterprise analytical application building. It has got components for information management, machine learning and big data, even cognitive services for cognitive intelligence, Cortana, and Power BI, the BI system. We are wrapping all of those. These are fully managed services in the cloud. And we are bringing that to customers, so it becomes very easy for a customer to integrate across all of these and build the right application. Now, if you were building an enterprise analytics product independently of something like this, you would source from a Hadoop vendor, a Hadoop system. You would source, say, from a data integration vendor like Informatica, a data integration, enterprise data integration system. You would source a BI system. You would source analytical systems maybe from a company like SAS. You would try to stitch them all together into an application. And that is hard to do. Maintaining them is hard. Developing expertise in every tool is hard. And making a reliable application day to day is even harder. By bringing them all together in a suite inside of the cloud as fully managed services, we make the building of such applications dramatically easier. That is the promise of the Cortana Intelligence Suite. And we believe in having intelligence in pretty much every product inside of that. So today, you will see that SQL Server has R with intelligence in it. Microsoft R Server, by the way, ships standalone. That's a platform to build intelligent applications in, statistical applications. You have Hadoop integrated with R. You have Spark integrated with R. We have deep learning with the computational network toolkit called CNTK. We have the machine learning service called Azure Machine Learning. We have the suite, the Cortana Intelligence Suite I talked about. We have R and Python tools for Visual Studio. Notebooks in the cloud called Jupyter Notebooks in the cloud, notebooks.azure.com, and cognitive services. Cognitive services for analyzing vision and speech and text and all types of unstructured data. And we are bringing all of that power to you together as services in the cloud. All right, so what does that mean? It means you can build solutions with all of them. So we have Cortana Intelligence Solutions. The Cortana Intelligence Solutions now in the Cortana Intelligence Gallery, that gives you templated solutions you can start from. They can be something like anomaly detection or predictive maintenance. We have stitched across the services in the cloud and given you starting templates that people can instantiate quickly. For example, one of our partners in Australia stood up a predictive maintenance solution for an airline. In a span of about a week to two, they could just leverage the whole thing and instantiate it at the airline in a proof of concept. That's the power of these cloud-hosted solutions. So this means intelligence in every software. So now let me actually talk about the unreasonable effectiveness of cloud. So the cloud brings enormous computing power, readily available to you just by going to a web page and starting to provision. And now we are sort of almost used to it, but it is very, very revolutionary. And you know, to put it in perspective, one smartphone today possesses more computing power than NASA had when they put a man on the moon. And now we're talking about provisioning that kind of capability in fractions of a VM on the cloud and orchestrating those VMs at scale in the cloud to do a computation. So what could happen when you apply all of this computing power to really important human problems? Let me play a video to show an example of the possibilities that are opening up. Let's play the video.
People used to refer to the two pillars of discovery, theory, and experimentation, but now you gotta look at computing also as a way of discovery.
In the life and medical sciences, the days of the aha moment when the test tube turns blue and you've made all your discoveries is ending. The new life science discovery paradigm is massive amounts of data, new ideas for analyzing that data, and the capability of doing it.
If you go back to 2001, it cost $100 million to sequence a genome because all that technology has been commoditized. Today, it's less than $6,000. The sequencers that are out there are generating data so fast right now that 15 petabytes of next-generation sequencing information needs to be analyzed on an annual basis. The data is doubling every 8 months, and our compute capability is only doubling every 24 months. So it's going to be hard for institutions to create computing resources to be able to do this alone. This is where the cloud comes in. It makes sense to have cloud providers like Microsoft Azure to provide those resources. What's exciting is that we have access to Hadoop-based tools. HD Insight provides us an interface that enables life scientists to grok this humongous amount of data that's coming out of next-generation sequencers in a very natural way.
When we first started doing this a year ago, it took 2 weeks to analyze one genome on our computer. And we now do 100 genomes a day.
So what excites me about what I'm doing in the cloud is the ability to accelerate discovery to the point that we may be able to find treatments for cancer. It's the journey of discovery that drives me more than anything else. And in the process of doing that, also being able to educate our leaders and scientists and engineers of tomorrow.
Very powerful. So before the clouds, before all of this computing power was available, they could sequence about one genome in 125 years of man effort. And that's the rate at which they could do it. And then it was really computational power, innovations in using that computational power, that changed the trajectory in a big way. And today, with all of that computing power available, you can sequence thousands of human genomes a day. And that is opening up a completely new era of personalized medicine. Very, very powerful. And so let me tell you about an intelligent lake pattern that allows you to now harness the power of analytics at scale on incredible petabytes of data, right? So think about this. Imagine you had very, very large amount of data, and you took the predictive loan scoring capability, or more interestingly, a cognitive services capability. You could run that on that vast amount of data and produce results that then can be combined with the rest of the data and fed into intelligent queries. That's what the Azure Data Lake allows you to do. Azure Data Lake is an intelligent lake service available in the cloud. It has two components. It has a component for storing enormous amount of data. It's called the Azure Data Lake Store. It has an HDFS API, Hadoop File System API. So you just use that API to bring in any type of data, structured or unstructured data, into that very large store. Layered on top of that is an Azure Data Lake, which runs on what are called YARN containers. It allows distributed computing at enormous scale. It has a language called USQL in it. That's a variant of SQL language. Now, what's great about USQL, it also supports extensibility. You can bring in arbitrary .NET code and put that into USQL, and especially if it's not doing extra network computation, et cetera, if it's operating only on the data, you can parallelize that computation over all of this data using the thousands of machines available in Azure Data Lake Analytics. And so you can actually even embed really interesting, intelligent algorithms into that system. And so you, because of its extensibility, you will be able to apply that intelligence to the data and bring in the power of the query language called USQL and blend all of that together to produce powerful, intelligent results. Okay? And in the future, by the way, that same platform, Azure Data Lake, will also support Hadoop and Spark computations on that same distributed platform. So now I'm going to progress towards a demo showing you all of these capabilities. But first, let me talk to you a little bit more about cognitive services. Cognitive services allows you to process natural input, images, vision, text, sentiment analysis, and so on. So the APIs we have available today on the cloud covers vision, covers speech understanding, covers language understanding, covers knowledge and search. There are about 35 APIs today. Now, if any of you how many of you have seen the application called howold.net? I think a small number of hands went up. There's a fun application we put up together on the web using the face analysis API in cognitive services. You upload a picture to it. It tells you how old you look in that picture. Okay, it's a fun application. Make sure to check it out before you go on your next date. Now, you can take that intelligence and think about integrating that with something like Azure Data Lake Analytics, and say you have a million or a 10 million photos in the Azure Data Lake. You can run that face analysis over all of them, understand age, gender, recognize people, and that data can then be surfaced in a query system so you can run analytical queries over it. You can ask how many people look under 40, or how many people are smiling, or so on. You can construct complex queries. That's the power of combining the two. And to show this off, let me invite Matt Winkler, who is a principal PM manager in my team, and he will illustrate this through a demo. Matt?
All right, thanks, Joseph.
Thank you.
All right, so what we're gonna do today is talk through, okay, good, demo's up. So we're gonna talk through what happens when you take those powerful algorithms and put them together with a big data processing engine. And so, one of the APIs that we talked about is our Vision API. The Vision API is super cool. You can take any photo, you can hand it to the API, and it'll return back to you a description of what's going on. Hey, I think there's a man walking down the beach with a dog. It'll also return a set of objects and tags about what it sees in the picture. So it'll see beach, water, trees, those types of things. And so that's a super convenient REST API. You can use that today. What I want to show now is what happens if you take that and you put that together with a big data engine like Data Lake Analytics. And so inside Data Lake Analytics, I have over a million images. These images are all generally images of people. They're culled from a bunch of kind of common scenes, so it's not a bunch of clip art. And I want to be able to write queries over all million of these. And so what I'm going to do is use USQL for this. And so what you'll see is as I process through the images, I'm going to do two different things. One is I'm going to tag them. This is going to tell me, oh, there's a dog, there's a cat, there's a beach or water. And then I'm also going to analyze them for emotion. I want to understand how people are feeling. Now, once I have that, what's super cool about this is this goes from images, which are very opaque that we can't really write queries over, and it returns a bunch of columns that are actually things I can reason about, like tags and things like that, and the emotions in the image. So it makes it very, very easy for me to go ahead and do things like, I'd like to filter out all of the images that contain dogs or cats. So I'm going to take this, and the real power of the system comes when I go to run this. Because Azure Data Lake Analytics is a big data system that's built for the cloud, and it allows me on demand to specify how much compute power I want. So I'll zoom in so that folks can see this, but I get this slider that lets me say, how much compute power do you want? Do you want one machine to process this, or do you want 1,000? I'm in a hurry. I'd like to get my results. I'm super anxious to find out how many pictures of dogs and cats. And so I'm going to crank it up to 1,000 and click Submit. When I click Submit, what's happening there is there's 1,000 machines inside of Azure that are spinning up, and in about 10 to 15 seconds, that's going to start processing all of those images. Now I'll go ahead and skip ahead to the output there, because it takes about 7 minutes to run. And you'll see here's a Power BI dashboard that's built on top of the output here, doing two things. What's the distribution of tags? Well, there's a lot of people. A lot of them are indoors. People are posing. There's a wall, suits. So we may have a fair amount of kind of like wedding photos and stuff because we've got a lot of people in suits. And if I go over here, we can see how many objects are recognized in each of the pictures. And you'll see the histogram here. It's really around 2 to 4 objects have the most appear in most of the pictures. And so that's processing images. What I'd like to do next is show how you can take these same techniques and apply them to text. So what I've got here is some text from War and Peace. How many folks have read War and Peace? Okay, I haven't. All of you who have, congratulations. It's really widely regarded as one of the pinnacles of world literature. And it's massive, right? It's 1,500 pages, 15 distinct books with over 50 major characters. That's pretty intimidating, and I'd like to see how we can take these intelligent APIs and make this a little bit more accessible. And so here is the text from Book 1, Chapter 3, and I'm going to use our Text Analytics API. This is available in Cognitive Services. You can go ahead and deploy this from the Azure portal, and I'm going to write just a little bit of Python code against this. And so what you see here is I take the text, I pass it to this cognitive service, and then all I do is get back a JSON document that lets me extract out what were all the key phrases. I ran this just before I came up here, and you'll see all of the character names start to show up, as well as a number of the other key phrases, annoyance, appealing smile, beautiful face, best families. Now, if I wanted to keep analyzing down this path, I'd want to start taking these key phrases and understanding more about them. What's the sentiment of the paragraphs they appear in? What are they closely related with? And so this is going to start to become really a data flow problem as I want to execute this series of steps over all of this. This type of data flow is something that USQL is perfect for. So we'll flip over here, and similar to what I did with the Vision API, we've got the DLL that sits behind that API, and we've put it inside of USQL. And so as I read through War and Peace, I'm going to be extracting the key phrases. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the sentiment of the paragraphs in which those key phrases appear. Now again, now I've just got data in columns. I know what to do with this, right? I can take and join these so that I understand, for the key phrases, what's the sentiment with which they appear. I'm going to take all of this output, and Senja, who's one of the visualization experts on our team, put together this really nice visualization of War and Peace. And remember, up until this point, I really don't understand anything about War and Peace. But we've identified those 50 major characters, and we've plotted them across where in the book do they actually appear. And so this gives me a nice way to understand, you know, I can see Andrew's a major character. He appears in most of the text. Some of these others only appear in a couple of chapters. Natasha shows up in almost all of them. I can also pivot it the other way and say, hey, who shows up in book 4? Right? And so if you think about the mass and the map of all of these different characters, peoples, and places, this lets me kind of understand what's going on. I'd also like to understand how the book evolves over time. And so we're going to take all that data for the various chapters, and we're going to visualize how that progresses over time. And so we'll see chapter 8 in book 1, a little bit of a high point, then it dips kind of low. And so this allows me, I could actually kind of stop and see, where are we at? How is this? And that will help me understand, as I'm trying to read War and Peace, should I be happy or should I be sad with what's going on here? Final thing that I'm going to show is a map that really tracks the characters in time. And again, just imagine this with all of that data that I showed, all of the things I was processing. Those were pretty simple queries to write, and this visualization is pretty powerful. This takes the major characters and it traces them through all of the books. And so we'll start with Andre. So he has a little bit of a rough go up front. And then book 6 is really magical for Andre. It's actually the happiest any major character is throughout the entire book. It turns out he falls in love in book 6. He falls in love with Natasha, who, if we look, doesn't really have a great book 6. Okay, so this means I should probably pay attention a little bit more as I'm reading. I really want to understand what's going on. Is Andre a jerk? What's happening here? And what we come to find out is actually there's a number of things that happen to Natasha's family. They lose all of their money, and this sets up all of the struggles that she's going to have throughout the rest of the book. Now, what I've been able to do is build this understanding of this giant piece of text without understanding hardly anything about the text, to create a guide to help me understand it. Now, even though War and Peace is a big book, it's not really big data, right? But we've executed it in an engine that would allow us to work against arbitrarily large amounts of data. And so I could take this exact same thing and I could generate these heat maps and these guides for every book in the Library of Congress, or every page on the internet, or for every customer service call that I've got transcribed within my call center, right? And so this is the power of taking those intelligence APIs and mashing them together with a big data engine. Joseph, back to you.
Very much. Who knew a data warehouse could generate the cliff notes of the future? But here's a powerful capability emerging. You now have the ability to analyze any type of unstructured data. It can be faces, it can be text. And remember, previously software was by and large sterile, couldn't understand emotions or sentiment. Now you have the ability to understand emotion and sentiment from text. You have emotion and sentiment in images, in faces, and even in speech, and you can bring that together with a query-based system to analyze, understand, and empower software with the ability to be empathetic. Let me show you another very powerful capability of the SQL, of Azure. Azure today supports an amazing NoSQL database built for ultra-scale mobile applications. It is called DocumentDB. It's sort of a planet-scale NoSQL, and which means it can have a single database that spans all across data centers all across the globe, which allows applications that are roaming, such as a mobile application, to connect to the data closest to where they're roaming. So if I go from US to India and I want to access the data, the same data, but then the data gets served out of the databases closest to me, so there's extremely low latency. And you can do this at the hundreds of terabyte scale databases, and that's extremely powerful. So to walk you through that, I will invite Kirill for a demo. But before he starts, let me explain some of the key things that DocumentDB is delivering. It delivers elasticity. Okay, elasticity, and you can scale up and down. It's independent elasticity for compute and storage. It offers extremely low latency writes, under 10 millisecond write at TP99. It has extremely high availability, 4 nines. It supports multiple consistency levels. Now, people are familiar with strong consistency or eventual consistency, but people aren't fully aware that there are between them multiple consistency levels. You can have a session consistency, for example, or you can have time-bound consistency, and there are multiple consistency levels, and DocumentDB supports them, and that's very powerful, and it's global scale. And all of the above with enterprise-grade SLAs. So now let me have Kirill, who is a principal engineering manager in my team, demonstrate those capabilities with a high write rate application for a telco, Contoso Telco.
Thank you, Joseph.
Thanks, Gil.
These powerful services that Joseph talked about allow us to build highly personalized experiences. And building personalized experiences at scale is hard. At global scale, it's unreasonable. Here we have a simple, very common scenario, billing. And the problem we want to solve is no one likes being surprised about the bill at the end of the month. Here we have a mobile app by a fictitious global telco provider, Contoso Mobile, that offers its customers current, near real-time bill, accurate, as well as instant personalized recommendations. Looking at Contoso Mobile dashboard in one of its operation data centers in West, hosted in Azure West US region, we build this experience for 50 million concurrent users. And as we can see from this graph right here, it required us to ingest data, usage data, at a rate of more than 10 million requests per second. And at the same time, on this graph, you see the latency at which Contoso Mobile is able to read that ingested data. And it's in single-digit milliseconds, allowing not only to offer our customers near real-time experience, but also have near real-time operational capabilities like incident detection and instant auto-healing. What is that magical data stores that allows to ingest so much data at the same time offering single-digit millisecond latencies? Meet Azure DocumentDB. Here I have Azure Portal. Data in DocumentDB is stored in collections. And here I have Contoso Mobile collection we built. It hosts near 70 terabytes, and it's ingesting data right now at the rate of more than 10 million requests per second. But Contoso is a global business. So DocumentDB allows us to replicate this collection across any number of Azure regions. Here I have 10 regions across the globe. So it's 700 terabytes. It gets better. Contoso Mobile is growing fast, and they decided to put together another operation center in East Asia, in Hong Kong. So here we have operation dashboard hosted in Hong Kong data center in Azure. And we see it looks very similar to what we saw just before. However, latencies are in hundreds of milliseconds. And the reason is because while the website is hosted in East Asia data center, data, the nearest data is ocean away. Let's fix this. With just one click right here, I can add another region. DocumentDB allows this turnkey global distribution capability, adding another region and bringing the data to the customers wherever they are and gaining that low latency. This global distribution capability offers us not only this fast latency all around the world, but also built-in high availability for your applications. You can specify failover policies, so you can, in case of rain day in any of the regions, you can fail over. Or you can manually fail over if you like to. Now, replicating 70 terabytes will take time, and we don't have that much time in the demo. So just for that purpose, for the demo purpose, in East Asia dashboard of Contoso Mobile, I hardwired this latency graph to a smaller collection that will take much faster to replicate, and it's part of the same account, so it's replicating right now. While it's doing that, let's take a look at what does it take to access this awesomeness from your application. Here I have a mobile app that I showed earlier, Android app built with Xamarin. And we use .NET Core SDK for DocumentDB to connect to DocumentDB account, connect to a collection, and query the data with that low latency anywhere in the world using familiar query language. All of this in three lines of code. Now let's get back to our dashboard. And as we can see, the latency is now back where it should be at low single-digit milliseconds. Replication is done. Now that is pretty cool all across the globe. So thank you. I just skimmed through the surface of Azure DocumentDB capabilities. Next slide, please. It's a globally distributed database. And it's offers you limitless, virtually limitless scale. We can, with this setup, we can push it up to 100 million requests per second. It's offers you single-digit millisecond latency at 99th percentile. It's global, and it's backed by 4 9 SLAs for anything you need to do. Over to you, Joseph.
Thank you, Kevin.
let's switch to the slides. So now let's talk about sensors and IoT. The unreasonable amount of sensors being created in the world today is driving a profound revolution in application building. Now, you know, 2013, there were 500 million sensors. Today, in 2020, we are projecting there'll be 50 billion sensors on the planet collecting data and sending that data to the cloud. That is a 100-fold growth rate, and it is 7 sensors per human being on the planet. So what does that mean? That enables applications of all types. For example, Rolls-Royce is connecting its jet engines to the cloud so they can predict potential failures in jet engines. There are car races now being empowered by data coming in directly from the car so they can predict when the optimal pit stop should be done. Even bicycling races are being influenced by that. Football is, they're putting sensors on people's players' shoulder pads, collecting data and using that to inform the play. So the type of innovation that is happening in this area is just mind-blowing. So I want to show a video as an example from a startup, from a powerful manufacturing company that is using the Internet of Things together with intelligence. Let me play that video.
At Jabil, we're privileged to serve 250 of the best brands on the planet. We provide ideation services, design services, manufacturing services. We architect and orchestrate some of the most complex supply chains around the globe.
Some of the main challenges we're facing today is how the consumer mindset has drifted into all aspects of the company. People want things flexible, they want it customized, they want it quicker, and our systems have to be able to service everybody from automotive to healthcare.
We're dealing a lot with mass customization, decreasing product life cycles, and the need to provide more and more data to our customers.
From a Jabil perspective, we are transitioning from reactive to predictive tools to prevent risk and increase velocity.
We're really focused on how is it that we can do everything that we do more effectively leveraging digital type technology.
As we start looking to what we think the challenges are going to be going forward, both what we want to do in the cloud and what we want to do on-prem, the Azure platform seemed to be the best fit for us on trying to mix those two worlds together.
Our engagement with Microsoft enabled us to do some exciting things in predictive analytics and trying to understand how we can become much more proactive in our management of our manufacturing processes.
Often we are data rich and information poor, so we can take the data from our manufacturing, we incorporated data from our supply chain and data from the field, and we can put that into our modeling. We can create some sophisticated models that allows us to predict defects and provide very good feedback to our customers on how to improve designs and improve the customer experience with the product.
We're working diligently to marry the data points from a reactive to a predictive mindset. So we're taking millions of data points and putting them into what's called the iFactory manufacturing suite. That's our new generation of shop floor control in the corporation. It integrates end-to-end production in all of our factories for the first time in the history of our group. The ability to exercise the tool both here in our facilities, in our DCs, and jump out to the cloud and back and forth is just unbeatable.
The predictive analytics, the use of iFactory, the integration of Microsoft Azure just helps us deliver that much faster, that much more efficient to ensure that when our customers, consumers receive that product, that it's a great experience.
The industrial Internet of Things is exciting. There is a tremendous revolution happening there. And I want to show you even another, even more exciting thing. Imagine inspecting infrastructure of all types all across this world. A company called eSmart Systems, a very revolutionary company, startup based in Norway, all built entirely in the cloud, has now this system called a connected drone. There's a drone that flies over power lines inspecting power lines, and there is AI behind the scenes to helping detect faults in power lines. So let's play that video, and let's see how that is.
eSmart Systems' connected drone adds intelligence and mobility to big data analysis, and it's a game changer. The current methods of power line inspections are slow, expensive, and dangerous. Connected drone is replacing manual processes with Azure-powered machine intelligence. Drones are sent out on beyond line-of-sight missions. Data is collected using multiple sensors and streamed to Azure. Vast amounts of data is sent through powerline-optimized deep learning algorithms. Connected drone updates component registries and pinpoints faults and weaknesses in this vital infrastructure. Connected drone is feeling the pulse of the power grid and keeps the power flowing.
So to tell you a little bit more about that story, I have with me Knut Johansson, the CEO of eSmart Systems. Let's get the slides.
Thanks a lot. Thank you, Joseph, for the opportunity for to present the connected drone system here today. We began with developing connected drone based on a strong conviction that drones in combination with intelligent technology could have a positive, disruptive impact on the energy industry. Our goals were to dramatically reduce the operating and maintenance cost of power grids. Equally important was to safely increase the reliability by preventing and reducing blackouts. The connected drone is equipped with multiple sensors, and each of the sensors have, for example, HD video, photo, and infrared cameras, and also LiDARs. The sensor generates a huge amount of data, and handling this data efficiently is crucial. So we need a way to analyze all captured data to effectively detect problems with the potential to cause blackouts, to identify infrastructure weak spots, and to be able to prioritize maintenance. The overriding issue then was how to find the best possible approach to solve these challenges. We built a solution on Azure, and we have done that for many years. So the decision was easy. By fully utilizing the Azure platform with the IoT suite, storage, service, and analytics, we are able to handle all IT processes in one single cloud solution. Our experience with the Cortana Intelligence Suite has also turned out to be a very fruitful approach for developing the advanced analytics needed to recognize power grid components and find faults in the power grid infrastructure. So in partnership with some of the biggest utilities in Norway, we have developed an incredible system that covers the whole value chain of line inspections. And the system supports all aspects of flight planning. The flight plan is executed through the flight control system, which is a vital part of the drone. During the flight, sensors collect data, and the data is immediately streamed through the communication carrier into Azure and analyzed in real time. It's efficient, it's effective, and it's just fantastic. We use advanced object recognition technology, and with deep learning, we analyze images streamed live from our drones. A slow, expensive, risky process performed by ground crews and helicopters is now being replaced by faster, safer, and cheaper Azure-powered machine intelligence made mobile. So here is an example from the connected drone system. We automatically recognize components and can immediately link new information to the specific history of each component. Faults and incumbent problems are discovered early, and all at a fraction of the cost of current inspection practices. With connected drone on Azure, the whole grid becomes alive. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Thank you. Very interesting. And today, with the GPU VMs available on Azure, you can do the kind of deep learning required to recognize imagery that you just saw demonstrated in the eSmart connected drone. And we have some of the fastest GPUs available on any cloud, the K80 and M60s, and you can orchestrate them using capabilities like Azure Batch to do deep learning and on enormous data with enormous compute power available. So we call that mission NN possible for training deep neural networks. So now let me talk about unreasonable effectiveness of data, the richness of data. You know, in 2020, it is projected that there'll be 40 zettabytes of data. Okay, to give you a sense of that, if one byte was one grain of rice, an exabyte would blanket the West Coast states of the United States, and a zettabyte would fill the Pacific Ocean, and a yottabyte would be an Earth-sized rice ball. That's the amount of data that we are collecting to analyze. Most of that data is going to be in the cloud. So that is leading to some unreasonable possibilities. Let me illustrate again with another video. Let's play that.
The NFL's next-gen stats platform is changing the game, giving broadcasters access to real-time location data, speed, and acceleration for every player, every moment, and on every square inch of the field.
A twisting, diving catch, touchdown!
In more than 120 regular season games, Zebra's on-field player tracking and motion work system has delivered cutting-edge data. Sensors throughout the stadium track tags placed on players' shoulder pads, charting individual movement down to the inch.
The next-gen stats have been credited with 968 yards of running tonight in total.
During the course of a game, broadcasters now have instant access to how much distance a player covers and the speed on a particular play.
A big man can run 19 miles an hour,
along with receiver routes and acceleration.
I mean, look at that speed.
The innovative technology will be in full display in this year's Pro Bowl, making it the most technologically advanced football game in history. In the NFL, the future is now. Brought to you by Zebra Technologies, official on-field player tracking provider of the NFL.
Back to the slides. So where do you land all of this data and integrate and analyze it for insights? You land it in the cloud, you land it in data lakes, you land it in data warehouses, you analyze these at scale, and you need, by the way, because this is an enormous amount of data, you don't want to pay a tremendous amount of money for the data storage and processing of that data. So you need elastic systems that charge you only for the compute you use. And Azure SQL Data Warehouse is one such. We announced the general availability of Azure SQL Data Warehouse in June. I had a customer here just tell me a short time ago that when they moved their data warehouse analytics from on-premises database that they had to Azure SQL Data Warehouse, their computation time went from 1 day to 1 minute. And it's an elastic system. It is the world's first elastic data warehouse in the cloud, meaning you can scale up the compute and scale it down instantly with a slider or with a piece of script. So it allows data warehouse computing with SQL language on enormous amounts of data with as much compute as you want to actually use for the computation. Now, in my previous company, I ran the data warehouse. It was a very, very large e-commerce company, the largest. And I ran the data warehouse for 3 years. I still have scars on my back to prove it. It is very, very hard to digest the enormous amount of data that you get every single day and process that into reports and analytics that you serve up in the morning within a very short SLA. That's a time when you need elasticity, the ability to provision very large amount of analytical compute on the cloud instantly, process all of that data within that short time window, and then not retain that, shut it down and save the money. And that's what Azure SQL Data Warehouse today allows you to do. You can fire up not just one data warehouse and scale it, but if you wanted, you can fire up 1,000, just all through a script. And that's extremely powerful. So there's one more power that is coming. We have what's called the hybrid transactional analytical processing capability. All of our databases, SQL Server database, the latest versions support the integration of transactions and analytics in real time into the system. So you have in-memory analytics with column stores that run 100x faster than traditional row-based analytics. And you have in-memory OLTP that runs 30x faster. Both are combined. And SQL Server, by the way, is the only database that allows you to update column stores live as transactions are coming in. No other database allows you to do that because you really typically have to reconstruct the columnar index if you're actually using columnar analytics. And that gives you breakthrough real-time operational analytics capabilities. And today we have one more thing to add to that list. Windows Server 2016 is getting close to general availability this month. And when you bring the power of Windows Server 2016 and SQL Server 2016 together, you now have the ability to command 24 terabytes of main memory. That means you can keep most of your working set of the data in main memory with columnar indexes in main memory and do OLTP transactions. And you can have in one machine up to 640 cores in one machine. So you can have the power of all of that compute with all of that memory, allowing you incredible speed up. Incredible speed up for your real-time intelligence applications. So I'd like to invite Lindsay Allen, who is the group program manager for SQL Server. She is the person to go talk about this incredible power that is in the world-class database that SQL Server is. Lindsay?
Thanks. Sorry, machine went to sleep. Oh, come on. Very good. So we do boot up on 24 terabytes. We have a machine, 24 terabytes, HP Superdome, and
you're probably the first to see a 24 terabyte SQL Server database.
Okay, now I lost my connection. Let me get it back. Okay, I got my Wolfpack back.
So let's switch to the demo.
So remember, you have to make decisions between DAS and SAN, right? The performance, cost, manageability and fault tolerance. Most important, fault tolerance. You'll probably learn from through the blood, sweat, and tears, the data you care, you really, really care, don't put on DAS. And so now with Windows Server 2016 and have this new feature called Storage Spaces Direct, bring the best of both worlds together, and let me show you not just the cost, the fault tolerance, and the built-in with DAS. So you basically, what you see here, the four nodes, two sockets, commodity server, and built together as fault tolerance cluster by Windows Server. And here you see the four nodes. And now, actually, because it's CSV, cluster shared volume, all your nodes can see it. And you can actually simply swing it for any nodes, right? Just like SAN, you don't have to recable it. And then I have a storage pool built across and a DAS replication for you. So this is on, I got a SQL 01. So let me show you the throughput this thing can do. Four simple two-socket machines. I'm running this speed. Look, that's a 25 gigabytes per second. You know, your data warehouse will love it. So.
Right. And I think for people who haven't quite fully grokked all of what she just showed, remember, you've eliminated the need for a storage area network here. With a cluster of a few machines, commodity machines, and layering on Windows Storage Spaces Direct, you created a file system that is reliable, redundant. And she just put a query on it and showed the enormous bandwidth, I/O bandwidth, at 25 gigabytes per second that system is able to deliver. So this system is now, at extremely low cost, able to build the latest generation data warehouses. And believe me, if you build that today with SQL Server, you will get unbeatable TPCH, and you will get all the predictive capabilities of R and intelligence integrated into SQL Server. That's an incredible combination.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And that's the four nodes has collectively 48 terabytes of raw Samsung NVMe storage. So I'm going to run SQL on it. It's connected with Mellanox 100 gigabits network cards and switches. So I'm going to run a query, which is I/O intensive. I'm going to drop the clean buffer, so make sure we're doing I/O here, right? And so you can see the time it runs. So now I'm going to scan this. It's about 6 billion rows. It's done. It's about a second. It's 1.4 seconds. Of course, if I run now again, it will be a lot faster. Now it's less than a second, now it's in memory. So even just doing pure scan and for 6 billion rows on this commodity cluster is just over a second. Okay, my second demo. So as Joseph said, right, we run SQL Server in Azure as well. Remember this thing called SRIOV and with virtualization, network virtualization function we had released in Windows Server 2012, I believe. Sorry, let me log in.
Yeah. And what we are today at Ignite, we have several announcements of extremely fast networking capability. And when you have incredible networking at low latency, you're now able to create replicas inside of the SQL database system extremely fast, which means when you have a primary replicated with other replicas to ensure reliability, the network is not slowing down writes to the primary, which means the entire database system runs extremely fast. And that's what Lindsay's about to show.
Yeah. So in Azure, right, why do we care about network latency? Because we keep synchronous replicas. And so in effect, every single transaction actually is committing across network. Remember back in 2012, when I first released SRIOV and shaved out the network latency by about 30%. But in Azure, it's actually even more significant. Trying to log in, sorry. There we go. Okay, my second one come back. Yeah, there we go. So I have two clusters. SQL Azure cluster, one with FPGA, not FPGA, SRIOV enabled, one doesn't. The one on top is the, I'm running the application, demo application on the cluster without, the bottom one with, right? So I just want, the demo is trying to show the latency impact. So I don't want any other noises in the system, so the demo literally is single thread doing inserts, there's no other factor. I just want to show you the difference network latency make, right? So I'll start transaction on top, and I'll start on the bottom. You see the difference? The network latency is about 3 milliseconds without the SRIOV, and the bottom is about 1.7 milliseconds. So that's about 70% less latency, and that's reflected in the transaction throughput. On this single thread, and you see about 70% more transaction throughput simply because of a network latency reduction.
Sounds awesome. Thank you, Lindsay. Thank you very much. And so, by the way, what you will see, let's switch back to the slides. What you will see is that applications that use the SQL database will just automatically become much faster because of this network capability. Thank you very much. All right, so we have, by the way, a lot of tier one customers using the SQL Server, and ISV is building on this on the power. I'd actually now like to invite one of our partners, Ron Kasabian, to showcase some of the joint work that Microsoft and Intel have done together to optimize across hardware and software to deliver amazing power to our customers. So, Ron, welcome.
Hi, Joseph. Thanks for having me. Well, you know, our teams have been working together for 20 plus years,
right,
on driving hardware and software improvements. And as we've done that, we've seen data volumes continue to grow, and they continue to grow. And the demand on being able to process data in data warehouses at increasing rates, and to drive insights on analytics across those larger volumes is really important. Organizations need a way to be able to scale. And they can scale today through distributing the data across multiple systems, but you end up paying the price of TCO and performance. So 2016 ends up being a pretty exciting year because our two companies together are introducing some new technologies, both from the software and the hardware perspective, that really address that need to scale. So Microsoft SQL Server 2016, along with Intel's Xeon E5 version 4 server, really presents some really exciting new opportunities. If you look at SQL Server alone, just the software benefit of 2016, on top of that Intel Xeon server, you're looking at a 39% improvement in performance. So that's fantastic work by you and your team. If you refresh your hardware at the same time and you bring in a new Intel Xeon E5 version 4 over the version 3, and you combine that with SQL Server 2016, you get a total increase of 73% improvement over prior generations of software and hardware. So that's a pretty significant increase. If you care about things like security as well, being able to encrypt the data using SQL Server's TDE instructions, you can see you can take advantage of our AES-NI encryption. So we encrypt. Now we have silicon instructions that encrypt the data at the silicon level. So it speeds up the encryption by a significant amount with almost no CPU overhead. So we've done some great stuff on our products. Now that's great, that's a lot of numbers and a lot of improvements, but what does that all mean for something more practical? So we asked our teams to head off and take on a big challenge. So we challenged them to go and create a 100 terabyte data warehouse running on a single 4-processor, 4-socket Intel server. And they came back with some amazing results. So first of all, the 100 terabyte data warehouse, this example resulted in about 600 billion records. And those records are typical records that you would see at something like a large retailer. So 600 billion records running in a single server. The column store engine was able to process, load the data at a 3x compression at about 1.6 terabytes, or 1.6 terabytes per second. Now, we ran an analytics across the top of that data warehouse, and we were able to process those 600 billion records in 3 seconds. 3 seconds across, sorry, 3 minutes.
Yep.
My apologies. 3 minutes across 600 billion records.
Okay.
The column store was able to be able to process 3.7 billion records per second.
Right.
So those are pretty amazing improvements. And again, I want to step back and say, you know, if you take a single piece of hardware, commodity hardware, you take off-the-shelf software, you can enable a 100 terabyte data warehouse running pretty incredible speeds. It's something a few years ago that, you know, would have been unimaginable.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Great. So I want you to think about that a little bit. 100 terabyte data warehouses used to cost, you know, multi-$1 million. It's incredibly expensive. It's MPP systems typically, and it's very, very hard. It's very, very hard to manage and maintain that system. Now you have a single SMP warehouse with 100 terabytes in there, and you can replicate them. You can have up to eight read scale replicas for extra computing power if you wanted. All of that comes together to you in a very familiar SQL Server environment. It's extremely cheap and very low TCO. So, you know, hopefully over the things that I've shown you how, enormous power of algorithms, the cloud, IoT, and data and databases and the hardware are coming together to create unreasonable power for us to build applications. And these things are helping not just in the core course of business. It's actually touching every fabric of our lives, even helping the handicapped. And I wanted to end with a story, end with a video that shows all of this power that artificial intelligence is enabling for all of us. Let's play the video.
I'm Saqib Sheikh. I lost my sight when I was 7. And shortly after that, I went to a school for the blind. And that's where I was introduced to talking computers. And that really opened up a whole new world of opportunities. I joined Microsoft 10 years ago as a software engineer. I love making things which improve people's lives. And one of the things I've always dreamt of since I was at university was this idea of something that could tell you at any moment what's going on around you.
I think it's a man jumping in the air doing a trick on a skateboard.
I teamed up with like-minded engineers to make an app which lets you know who and what is around you. It's based on top of the Microsoft Intelligence APIs, which makes it so much easier to make this kind of thing. The app runs on smartphones, but also on the Pivot Head smart glasses. When you're talking to a bigger group, sometimes you can talk and talk and there's no response and you think, is everyone listening really well? Or are they half asleep? And you never know.
I see two faces, 40-year-old man with a beard looking surprised. 20-year-old woman looking happy.
The app can describe the general age and gender of the people around me and what their emotions are, which is incredible. One of the things that's most useful about the app is the ability to read out text.
Hello, good afternoon. Here's your menu.
Great, thank you. I can use the app on my phone to take a picture of the menu, and it's going to guide me on how to take that correct photo.
Move camera to the bottom right and away from the document.
And then it'll recognize the text. Read me the headings.
I see appetizers, salads, paninis, pizzas, pastas.
Years ago, this was science fiction. I never thought it would be something that you could actually do. But artificial intelligence is improving at an ever faster rate. And I'm really excited to see where we can take this. As engineers, we're always standing on the shoulders of giants, building on top of what went before. And in this case, we've taken years of research from Microsoft Research to pull this off.
I think it's a young girl throwing an orange frisbee in the park.
For me, it's about taking that far-off dream and building it one step at a time. I think this is just the beginning.
Yes, it is just the beginning. Thank you.